We have to remember that more than 100 million people live in coastal areas that are less than 1 meter above the current high tide mark. And when you take that into account with the fact that we have growing coastal megacities, this is an issue that affects millions of people worldwide. So this conference next week in New York is going to be focusing not only on an average global sea level rise, but really looking at how does the sea level change in a regional sense, so cities and the smaller scales, and how will that impact coastal communities. And therefore, it will be gathering of not only scientists who are experts in particular areas to do with sea level rise, but also coastal planners, policymakers, city mayors, people who will be making the kind of decisions that will need to be made over the next 10 years or even 100 years going forward.
Can you give me an idea of how many of the world's major cities are at risk from rising sea levels?
Well, I don't have a figure to hand, but certainly you have major cities such as New York and New Orleans in the US, but then of course you have major countries such as Bangladesh or the Netherlands, where much of their actual land is within a meter or so above sea level. So it's certainly something that affects a lot of people.
And entire island states.
Exactly. You have Tuvalu and these Pacific islands that are only a meter or so above sea level. So it's something that affects an awful lot of people.
And it affects at the moment, more critically, the poorer island nations. So how are they getting their voices heard? How is this conference in New York going to spread the word? Is it a sort of regional approach you're looking at? You talk about the mayors of these cities being present.
One of the things we need to do is to try and reduce the uncertainties and give people better estimates as to what will sea level look like in their region of the world, whether that's a Pacific Island state or whether that's a city such as New York, which has perhaps more of a capacity to adapt. A good example perhaps is the underground system, the metro system in New York. And one thing that they're trying to do is to ensure that this is sort of made not quite climate proof, but the risks to flooding are reduced going forward with a rising sea level.
Now, the World Meteorological Organization has just announced that it's unlikely now that before the end of the year, we will see an El Nino happening. Does this mean we will see fewer extreme weather events? Because we haven't had an El Nino so far this year, and yet there's been terrible flooding from China. At the same time, there's been extreme drought in Australia. So what actually does this mean, the fact that we won't see El Nino before the end of the year?
So I think one thing we need to remember is that global warming is, I usually like to think of it as more like ocean warming, because around about 90% of the extra heat we put into the atmosphere because of greenhouse gases and such like actually end up in the oceans. And so there's a lot of the excess heat is stored within the oceans. Now, during an El Nino event, what actually happens is that on average, we have a lot of the heat that's stored in the oceans ends up in the atmosphere. So during an El Nino year, the atmosphere warms a lot more than in a non-El Nino year. And therefore, you have more energy in the atmosphere. And therefore, you have a high likelihood of extreme weather events and high impact events. We are still seeing a lot of high impact events because of the knock-on effect from the El Nino from last year, but also because of we're living in a warming climate, and therefore the chances are we will have more extreme weather events anyway.